Butterflies in general really capture our attention because of their delicate appearance and often their stunning colors. And you take a male Carner blue butterfly, for example, it's less than an inch across, but it stands out with its sort of silvery or dark blue wings with narrow black margins. We're going to talk today about the Carner blue butterfly as part of a series of programs we've been doing to mark the 40th anniversary of passage of the Endangered Species Act. And happily, they are an example of an environmental success. Great to talk about it today with Bob Hess. Bob's the Carner blue butterfly recovery coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Endangered Resources. Bob, thanks for coming by today. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. My pleasure to be here.
And Anna Hess is a PhD student at Michigan Tech conducting landscape ecology research on Carner habitat across the Wisconsin Carner range. And she's also an assistant in the Carner Blue Recovery Program at the DNR. And Bob's daughter as well. Anna, great to have you with us. Thanks for coming by.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Let's talk... Bob, maybe you can first describe the Carner blue butterfly for us, for those who aren't familiar with it.
Okay, well, it's a member of the blue butterfly family, and there are very, very many of them. But the Carner itself is about the size of a nickel with the wings folded, maybe a quarter with the wings extended. The male has a sky blue coloring to the top side of the wings when it's folded up. The bottom of the wings are kind of a silvery gray. Now, the identifying mark for a characteristic for all Carners, males and females, is that on the bottom side of the wing, there is a continuous band of small orange crescents on the bottom of both the forewing and the hindwing. That is one of the only butterflies that has those markings. As I mentioned, the male is light powdery blue on top. The female is darker blue and brown. And the hindwings have some orange markings on the bottom edge of the hindwing. So that's what they look like.
Yeah, and we actually, up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we've got a photo of one from your DNR offices and also a link to more information about the Carner blue butterfly. So just go to the Larry Mueller Show and you can find out some more about it. Anna, what makes it that butterfly so special?
Well, it's a federally endangered butterfly. It used to be spread across the entire Great Lakes region. It's been decreased by over 99% of its original population.
Boy.
So there are small pockets of it all across the Great Lakes in New York and Michigan and Minnesota, but most of them still exist in Wisconsin, where we happen to have a lot of their of the habitat that they prefer.
Very interesting. And you know, often names like this are for a person, but the species was actually named by a novelist, wasn't it? Who was it? Butterfly specialist Vladimir Nabokov? Is that
Nabokov.
Nabokov. That's yep. How it's pronounced. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was named for a place.
The Carner, yep. It was named after Carner, New York. But, yes, Vladimir Nabokov discovered that butterfly along with a lot of other blue butterflies.
Well, we're pretty lucky because more Carner blues live in Wisconsin than probably anywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us where they live. What's the habitat like, Anna?
Well, the habitat, there are several different kinds of habitat that it lives in. It lives in barrens ecosystems, which are an open forest complex of mm-hmm. oak and jack pine with a grassy, shrubby understory filled with nectar plants. And there, it also lives in savanna habitats, in which there's mostly a grassy understory with taller trees, mostly oak trees. And it also lives in dry prairie environments, which are just grassland environments. But all of these ecosystems are established on sandy, well-drained soils.
Mm.
So the sandy soils are key, and that's why they are established across the Great Lakes region, because of all of the sand that was left behind by the last glacial retreat. So you will not find them anywhere south of those sandy soils.
Huh. And Bob, what do they feed on? What are they?
Well, the key plant here is the wild blue lupine.
Yeah.
And it's the key plant because that is the only plant that the larvae of the Carner blue butterflies will feed on. The adults will feed on a variety of nectar plants. They have preferences from one area to another. But no matter where Karnas exist, they must have wild blue lupine in order to be there. They won't eat the nursery hybrids that are out there, the Russell hybrids. They won't touch it.
Well, Fred actually in Watersmead, Michigan, had a comment relating to that. Fred?
Yeah, that was, thanks, guys. That was one of my questions. I have 9 acres I just planted in prairie just north of Amherst in the town of New Hope, and I didn't know if anybody would know if the Karner has moved that far out. It would be like on the corner of 161 and County Trunk T, but that's one deal. So I planted lupine, but there's another plant that has to be there too. So there's the plant that they feed on, but there's another plant that I don't know if that's where they reproduce on, but off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly what the name of that wildflower plant is. But there's two of them, the lupine for food, but then this other plant. So maybe, you know, the listeners would be interested in knowing what that other plant is.
Yeah, what do you know that other?
Well, actually, I'm not aware of any other plant that is required for Karner reproduction. Karners tend to lay their eggs on or near the base of lupine plants so that when the larvae hatch, they can get out and feed again. But other than that, the Karners will feed on a variety of different wildflowers. Some of their favorites are wild butterfly weed, the orange butterfly weed. They like a lead plant. They like, New Jersey tea is a flowering shrub that's very attractive to them. There's a variety of things, but no particular other plant that is required for their survival.
Hmm. I have one other question.
Sure.
When I was thinking about getting some federal funding for my planning, one of the things that, and I didn't get it, in order to get the funding, they had to, there had to be a siting 1 mile within your area by a qualified or registered Karner butterfly observer or expert. So because, you know, I didn't know about that, I wasn't able to get that funding. Have you heard anything of that, what I'm bringing up?
I'm not aware of that requirement for federal funding since I work for the state. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has charge of that program. It's the Partners in Fish and Wildlife program, I believe, and the person that handles your part of the state is Greg Hamilton, who has an office in Madison with Fish and Wildlife Service.
One final question. I'm a little saddened by seeing how the highway departments are planting the hybrid lupine along the highway rather than the natural wild lupine. So it's a little disturbing to see that. Mm. Where they're purposely doing that. So up here in Michigan along US 2, there's the hybrid lupine all along Highway 2 up here. Same thing when I was up around Duluth, Minnesota. I saw I don't think it's the wild because of the height of it.
Oh, yeah. I know which lupine you're referring to. Yeah, it's actually a western lupine hybrid. Well, it's not a hybrid, it's a western lupine, and the Karner will not feed on it. They need the shorter lupine that's native to the Great Lakes region.
Hmm. But the western lupine is more a native than is what you're saying. It's not a hybrid. Is that correct?
Yeah, the tall blue lupine is native to the United States, but it is not the same lupine. It is not the wild blue lupine, Lupinus perennis, that the Karner will feed on. So if they want to establish Karner habitat along corridors in the Great Lakes region, they have to plant the correct lupine.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question or comment, as we talked with Bob and Anna Hess today about the Endangered Species Act and about the Karner blue butterfly. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, a comment, or even a photograph there. And we would certainly love to hear from you. So it's found in very small places in Wisconsin. But talk about its life cycle. What's the life cycle like of it, Bob?
Well, the Acarna overwinters as an egg or a first instar larva in the leaf litter close to the lupine plants where it was laid. And those eggs hatch around early April as things start warming. They tend to hatch at the same time that the lupine plants start to emerge, which provides immediate feed for the young larvae that are emerging. They are biologically and environmentally timed to come out to hatch at the same time as the lupine emerges. So they'll feed on those plants for 3 to 4 weeks, and then they pupate and drop into the soil, drop down to the soil level, and hatch. Hatch about the end of May, early June, normally. Mm-hmm. Normally. Yeah. And that flight, the flight then will last, the first flight, there are two flights per year. The first flight lasts for 4 to 5 weeks, peaking around the end of June, tapering off into the middle of July. During that time, and there are a number of different carnards hatching over this period. There are a number of broods during a given flight. Those butterflies lay eggs the same way that their ancestors did near the lupine plants. The egg and larval stage is much more rapid. The second flight begins usually around the end of June, early July, even as late as mid-July, and goes into August, sometimes late August. By that time, the butterflies lay their eggs, and those eggs lay there on the in the litter at the base of those lupine plants all winter long to hatch the next spring.
Mm. And I'm wondering, you said under normal conditions, and we certainly haven't had normal conditions this year with kind of a really early spring and then cold and then really hot weather and drought. And wondering about how all this has affected the Acarna blue.
We're still trying to figure it out. March was hot. April was cold. Normally, you get a gradual warm-up, and they'll follow the usual schedule. This year, the butterflies started flying almost 3 weeks ahead of schedule. And that really kind of caught us off guard, and we've been chasing the flight ever since. The second flight is almost over right now. We're just finishing up our annual surveys. But now we do have an emergence model. It's a computer model that was developed by the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the Forest Landscape Ecology Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And that model takes into effect degree days of accumulation each spring, uses historical records, and makes a prediction as to when the butterflies will emerge and when their flights will peak for both the first and the second flights. We've been using that for about 5 years. It works pretty well, except for a year like this when Mother Nature really messes it up.
Yeah, for sure.
Nature didn't read the manual.
No, that's for sure. Sherry couldn't stay on the line, but she wonders if the climate change is affecting the range and so forth for the Acarna blue butterfly.
Too early to tell. There have been dire predictions of the suitable climate moving north as much as 300 miles in the next 30 to 40 years. So far, what we're seeing is higher populations at the south edge of the range than we have seen in the past with the warmer summers, and mixed bag farther north into the northwest part of the state because we've had extremely dry conditions up there. That have limited the butterfly success.
Bob Hess and Anna Hess, our guests today, as we talk with them about the Acarna blue butterfly as part of our sort of recognition of the 40th anniversary of the Endangered Species Act. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo, a question, or a comment there. I'm Larry Mueller. Rob Ferret, our on-air producer today, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the Acarna blue butterfly today with Bob Hess, Acarna blue butterfly recovery coordinator with the DNR, Anna Hess, PhD student at Michigan Tech, conducting landscape ecology research on Acarna habitat across Wisconsin's Acarna range, so also working with the DNR. Great to have both of them with us. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Have you ever seen a Connor blue butterfly? Where was it? And do you take part in any citizen monitoring efforts? We'd love to hear about that as well. So give us a call or shoot us an email, and love to hear from you. And there are citizen monitoring efforts going on, are there not? Anna, go with you.
Yes, actually, can find my notes on that. Dad actually knows more about it than I do, but this was the first summer that our citizen monitoring program really took off. It was originally started by Tracy Lee Kerner, who is a private citizen who was originally attracted to the program because of the name association. Her last name is also Kerner, K-A-R-N-E-R.
Cool.
Yep. And in 2009, Tracy laid the groundwork by making initial contacts with volunteer groups across the state. She began to set up a volunteer network site for citizen scientists and was working with another young lady named Jody Shaw, who unfortunately is no longer working with us, but she was an excellent, excellent person to work with and really helped get the volunteer network set up. Unfortunately, Tracy had to leave Wisconsin in 2010 for health reasons, but we have kept up the volunteer program that she initially started.
Well, that's wonderful. We've got quite a few callers to visit with you, so let's go to the back to the phones.
Okay.
Valerie in Beulah, Michigan, it's your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. They talked about the natural wild lupine, and I heard something about the western lupine. And where would be a source that a person could get those seeds?
All right, to get the correct seed. And the correct seeds are what again, Bob?
Wild blue lupine. The Latin name is Lupinus perennis.
Okay, and where do we get those seeds?
Well, a lot of the state properties in Wisconsin actually have people collect them, and they dry and season their own seeds. But they are available to the general public through a number of private prairie seed organizations. I'm not endorsing anybody, but the one I know about is Prairie Nursery just near Westfield.
Yeah.
And
there
are others out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do a great job at Prairie Nursery, and I'm sure that they would have them there for sale.
So does Prairie Nursery have a website?
Prairie Nursery, yes.
Address?
Yeah, if you go online to Prairie Nursery,
okay,
you're going to find it. And the person who heads that up has an international reputation for his work, and he's been often been a guest on the show, so he really knows his stuff. So good, and I should say there are plenty of other places out there too, but Prairie is the one that comes to mind. If somebody else has another one to mention, please do call in and let us know. So we've got that, and thanks again, Val. Carol in Fond du Lac, on to you now. Hi, Carol.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have to tell you, Memorial Weekend, May 27th, we went outside of Wild Rose, Wisconsin, to a Connor Blue Conservancy. And we had my soon-to-be daughter-in-law with us, who's an entomologist. And she took some pictures, and she was laying on the ground, and she watched an egg being laid. I tell you, the girl was
neat.
In seventh heaven.
Wow.
Oh, it was so exciting.
Did she take a picture?
Yes, she did. The other thing, when we first got there and we were walking and watching for some, I had my camera, and every so often there was like a little blue plastic butterfly attached to a little bush. And I took a picture of that because I thought, if we don't see a real one, this is what we'll have.
Now, actually, those were little paper butterflies. Just prior to you being there, we had run a training session for volunteers based out of the Wild Rose Hatchery, and you were on the Connor Blue Meadow State Wildlife State Natural Area, which is just east of Wild Rose. And so we had set up some training sites, and since there were we just wanted people to be able to identify little blue spots sitting on the vegetation, we actually taped these little butterflies to the vegetation along the survey lines. But
well, thank goodness we found real ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it was terribly exciting.
Oh, thanks, Carol.
thank you.
Yeah, and if you have any of those photos you want to share, post one up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We would love to see them. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jim in Minocqua, we will go to you next. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good morning. I own some property south of Minocqua that fronts on Highway 51, and the Department of Transportation is planning two additional lanes. There's going to be a road expansion from Minocqua down 16, 17 miles south. And I want to know how to work with the DOT, or if you believe that the DOT would support planting wildflowers along the earth that they're going to be moving around to make wildflowers that would be attractive to butterflies.
Well, I don't know about that. I know that up in that area, it's not possible to attract Kerner blue butterflies because that's way north of their range. They don't live that far north. Northernmost part of their range is probably the northern part of Portage County.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So that's 100 miles away.
Yeah, it's quite a ways for you. The range itself is kind of crescent-shaped. It follows the tension zone, if you're familiar with that. That
yes,
runs
I
from
do.
North, yeah, curves down through through central Wisconsin and then back up to the northwest in the Grantsburg area, and that's sure. that's the range of the Kerner blue butterfly.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I was thinking back to when you were talking about gluing or pasting those little blue butterflies. I was in Trinidad and looking for the scarlet ibis in one of the swamps, the Kearney Wildlife Sanctuary, and thought we spotted one, and a guy said, "No, actually," he said, "I got that's one that we painted and stuck it in the in case we weren't going to see one at all. We would always show people that one so they got to look at it." All right, on to more callers here. You can join in, have some open lines, get you on pretty quickly. At 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call if you have a question or comment about the butterflies. Talking to Kerner Blue today with our two guests, Anna Hess and Bob Hess. And Ted and Toma, you're next. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Sure. I don't know how long your guests have been involved in this butterfly work, but going back 1996, I'm from Pola, and my property abuts an abandoned landfill.
Okay.
And they were going to do, it had sit idle for 20 years from 76 to 96, and then they had to do a recapping or lining on it or something. But it was 40 acres full of pine trees, and supposedly they found some Kerner blues in there, and it kind of delayed the project. I know we never heard anything else about it. I was just kind of curious if they're aware of what that, if they were actually in there, or they just thought it was a good habitat, or what the deal was.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ted, thanks. Bob, you were around then.
I was around right from the start when they were listed in 92. I was a forester at Black River Falls at the time. But anyway, yeah, I'm not familiar with that particular spot, but the question kind of leads us into a discussion of the HCP partnership.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Right. So anyway, starting in the butterfly was listed in December of 1992. In 1993, well, the effect is essentially was that it had a severe impact on the forest industry in Wisconsin and anything related to it, because the act prohibits any disturbance or harassment or killing of an endangered species, and the Kerner butterflies in Wisconsin, basically across central Wisconsin, were everywhere. So you could not conduct any forestry practices at all without conducting a survey first to see if they were, if Kerners were there or not, and that would be the case with this old burrow pit that you're referring to. It took 8 years of negotiation, and actually what happened is the DNR took the lead with an idea to assemble a partnership that would apply for a statewide incidental take permit from the Fish and Wildlife Service to work with and around the Kerner blue butterfly. It took 8 years to get it put together. When it finally was formulated and approved by Fish and Wildlife, it was the first of its kind in the nation and has been a model for similar situations ever since then across the United States. So that's a tremendous success program. And under the terms of that partnership, those people, those partners that are enrolled, have agreed to maintain habitat and look out for the welfare of the carnivore butterfly on land holdings that they have. It's mostly the large industrial landowners, state and county forests. Right-of-way companies like the transmission and pipeline companies are in there. There are 42 partners today. We started out with 28 back in 93, and there are 42 partners today. It's been a very successful program. The trade-off is that small private landowners and small businesses are exempt from the regulations of the Endangered Species Act, with the understanding that the partners in the agreement will take care of the butterflies for them.
Okay. All right. And talk about a disparate group. I mean, there was a large group of people from all walks of life meeting on establishing these rules. It was really something.
I was involved in those early meetings, and it was interesting because the way it started out early on is the industry people lined up on one side of the table and the government DNR people on the other side of the table. Nobody trusted anybody else. And usually everyone left the meetings angry.
Yeah.
But in 1995, the DNR hired a coordinator, David Lentz, who was a professional facilitator, and he turned things around completely to where within a few years everyone was cooperating and pulling together in the same direction, and were eventually be able to put together this partnership. It was an excellent job of facilitating on Dave's part.
Brandon in Neillsville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, first time caller, long time listener.
Thank you.
I live. Pretty much right in the central belt of Wisconsin. I found this conversation very interesting. I'm currently seeking grants for beekeeping and get an apple orchard and other things going. I was wondering if I could make planting this plant part of the project. I heard you mention something about grants.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, the Fish and Wildlife Service has grants available for endangered species through their Partners in Fish and Wildlife program. And the state doesn't have anything available in that area, but the Fish and Wildlife Service does. And you'd have to check their website and look for the Partners in Fish and Wildlife program, and you can get information there on those kinds of programs.
Perfect. And Rob may be able to put a link up to that, too. We'll see what we can do. Tony in Menominee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, sir. I just tuned into your show, and I just caught a little bit of this. I'm a custom prairie grass seeder up in this area, and I don't know if any discussion was made about Eau Claire and Buffalo County having a program up here called the SAFE program. It's part of the DNR, or part of the CRP program with the federal government. And they are targeting carnivore blue butterflies up here in these two counties. And we planted about 700 acres in Eau Claire County this year with wild blue lupin. Don't know if you guys have discussed it or not.
I'm glad you brought that up. One of the lead people on that is Paula Kleinche's Neff, who is on the faculty of the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, and she works closely with that program. I know her. I consider her a friend. Yes, I'm aware of that program going on. It is outside of the area that DNR is working in for recovery. We concentrate our recovery efforts on specific state properties where we know we have good populations, mm-hmm. and we're trying to meet certain population goals required by the Fish and Wildlife Service. But the outreach stuff goes for smaller private landowners, and carnivores do exist along the river. Are through projects like the SAFE program and the Fish and Wildlife program that I referenced earlier.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks, Tony.
Hey, you bet. We've run in quite a few acres up in this area in the last several years with lupin to attract carnivore blues, and I can't tell you definitively how many acres that is, but I know the last 10 years off and on we've run in quite a few acres.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. We had an email from Julie who wonders, how do people volunteer get involved in the carnivore recovery program?
Our volunteer program is still going through a lot of growing pains. But we have a volunteer coordinator stationed at the Wild Rose Fish Hatchery. Her name is Joan Voigt. She has an email address. It would be joan.voigt, V-O-I-G-T, at wisconsin.gov. You can contact her by email if you want to volunteer. Joan did the organizing for this year's volunteer program, which was successful in terms of the number of people we recruited, but we were blindsided by the early flight, and we ran out of time, and we're not able to field as many volunteers to do surveys as we wanted to. Mm. We're hoping for better weather and better success next year because there's a lot of work for volunteers to do out there helping us run surveys.
Yeah, absolutely. Shay in New Berlin, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was born in Wisconsin, and I'm fond of the carnivore butterfly. I currently live in Michigan. And I'm wondering if the population can be reestablished or can be established in any area other than its unique current range. I have 50 acres that I've been planting sporadically into various prairie environments. And I live in Michigan, south of Lansing, Michigan. Can the carnivore butterfly travel if it's got sympathetic habitat in another area?
All right, let's, Bob, you want to take a shot at that?
Sure. Yeah, butterflies can travel. Carnivore butterflies can travel, not long distances. They're considered weak flyers, but they'll go maybe. They have been documented as flying as much as a mile or so under certain circumstances, but that was across open water on a mark recapture study done on the Niceto National Wildlife Refuge. Normally, we figure about a quarter of a mile is their normal expansion range for a given year. As far as setting up habitat for them, it sounds like you are in the Michigan range. If your property is, yeah, your property is in Michigan. And the Michigan Department of Resources and Natural Resources may be able to give you some information on what their precise range markers are there. You may be inside of the range.
Yeah.
So are there carnivore butterflies in Michigan? I wasn't aware of that.
Yes.
Oh, yes, there are. On the Huron-Manistee Forest and a number of the Michigan State Forests, there are populations. They probably rank second to Wisconsin in numbers of carnivores that they've been able to document. And we work... we're all part of a nationwide partnership called the National Recovery Team, and we keep track with what's going on in other states. But Michigan, yes, has an active carnivore recovery program.
So do you ever, I recognize it's a protected species, is there ever any effort to transplant it into sympathetic habitats? If I were to go through some sort of... program, is it possible to purchase butterflies and put them in my habitat and see if they take?
Fish and Wildlife regulates that. You would need a permit from the Fish and Wildlife Service to do it. I don't know of many of these permits that are out there. There have been transplant or reintroduction programs going on in Indiana and Ohio that I'm aware of. But they're not widespread, and they're usually done by large conservancy groups or public agencies. For a private individual to do it, probably not.
Probably not. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Shelley emailed and wanted you to talk about the ant connection. And do you want to take that, Anna?
Yeah, there is a connection between carnivore larvae or caterpillars and several ant species.
Oh.
At least 20 different ant species that have been identified as having a sort of a symbiotic relationship with the carnivores. And very basically, the caterpillars secrete sort of a sugary mucus that that the ants eat, and in return, the ants protect the carnivores, carnivore caterpillars from predators. And they have a lot of predators. They're very tiny caterpillars, and they get eaten by parasitic wasps or crab spiders or birds or basically any larger insect can eat them. And the ants will actually protect the caterpillars in return for food.
Well, that's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. We have, by the way, Rob's posted a link to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service page on the Kerner blue butterfly. So we've got that up on my Facebook page, which also includes some great information. Also, I wanted to mention, too, a caller recommended a nursery in Monona, Minnesota to buy lupine seeds, and they recommended Prairie Moon. So that's another Prairie Moon in Monona, Minnesota. On Facebook, Diane wondered if there'd be any place in western Wisconsin where she could visit to observe Kerner blue butterflies.
Depends on how far west you are, but in Eau Claire County, you can see them at the Coon Fork Barren State Natural Area, which is just north of the Coon Fork State County Park. Also at the Canoe Landing Prairie State Natural Area. Points west, the Black River State Forest has a lot of them. Jackson County Forest, the Bower Brockway Barren State Natural Area has Kerners. And those are the westernmost sites that I'm aware of within the range that I work in.
Mm.
I'm sure there are some farther along the river, but I don't know where they are.
And Anna, you're studying, doing landscape ecology research on the habitat across Wisconsin, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are you encouraged by what you found?
Oh, absolutely. Several years ago, I started this research project because the Kerner Recovery Program needed to better understand why the Kerners were selecting certain habitat sites over others. Sites that looked perfectly good to us, but the Kerners obviously were seeing something that we weren't. So I developed a research study that is attempting to identify and model habitat selection by the Kerners. And so far, what I'm seeing is very encouraging. I haven't run any statistical analyses yet, but the information that we're finding has been able to predict where in a field the Kerners will first emerge, where they will have their peak densities at the peak of the flight, where they will end up last, you know, when the flight is ending.
Right.
And we're also better able already to understand why the Kerners select some fields over others. And that's going to help us restore habitat more efficiently and more effectively.
That is very cool. Is there one quick reason you can give us why they would select one field over another?
Well, it sounds silly, but food all year. They need nectar plants all summer, not just in the spring, not just at the end of the summer. They need it all summer. And that includes many different species of flowers. There's no one species of flower that blooms during both flights.
So if you've got a field with a bunch of different kinds of plants, you're going to be more likely to have...
Exactly. You have to have them at the beginning of the summer, and you have to have them at the end.
A good fact to end on. Thank you both so much for being with us today. And again, we posted on my Facebook page... at the Larry Mueller Show, the link to the Kerner Blue Butterfly Program with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Bob Hess, Anna Hess, our guests today. Thank you so much, and hope we can do this again.
Thanks for the invitation.
Appreciate it very much. We have been talking about a kind of a wonderful example, I think, of how with planning, with commitment, and the necessary resources, we can have an endangered species recover. I'm going to talk next about an aspect of environmental policy that has to balance the needs of the environment, but also humans' needs for food and energy and shelter. John Greenler from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, GLBRC as it's called, will be with us. And UW-Madison Professor Holly Gibbs also joins in, so I hope you'll stay tuned. They're coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.